Shooters, welcome back. If you're new, welcome in. We have over 150 episodes for you to choose from. I know it can be a little daunting to figure out where to start, but most of these episodes are very timeless, and so you can go back and listen to any of these at any time. We've had the opportunity to speak with some of the best players and basketball minds our state has to offer. So we're sure that you'll find something in here that you'll like and enjoy, but also learn something along the way. We're just retired hoopers turned coaches that have a true passion for the game of basketball. We're trying to share that with you, have some fun along the way, and promote the kids, coaches, and programs throughout this state that are working hard each and every day. If there's something you like, please let us know. Comment, like, follow, spread the word. And as always, shooters shoot.
Well, Coach Bergman, welcome to the Shooter's Touch.
Well, thanks for having me. Like you said, it's not my first podcast, but it's probably the most important one.
Hey.
We appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, we appreciate that, definitely. So, well, Coach, we are excited to have you on here, learn a little journey. What got you to this point? We're at over 600 wins. Do you know what the actual number is right now?
No, I have to look it up because you always got to fill out these sheets for the media people. And it hasn't gone up as fast the last few years as it did for a while. So, I think probably the year Evan Bronze was a senior, I think I won my 600th. So I know it's above that, but I really don't know the number.
I tell you what, that's pretty good, is considering to go through as a high school coach. And so got the head job at West when you were what, how old, 20, 29, 30?
I think 29, but in that ballpark. Yeah, I had been at West Liberty the year before as the head coach. And I'd been at Monticello for 3 years before that as a head coach. And in between, I went to Iceland for a year and coached a pro club team. So
how did that come about? How did you get the Iceland opportunity?
Well, when I was working at Monticello, I was actually I ran a dorm at University of Dubuque, and was kind of my connection there with John Davison and John West, who went to Iceland. His wife got pregnant. She didn't want to go back. So he said, "You want to go?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll do that." So I did that for a year, and no volcanoes like they're having now. So I probably picked a good year.
Wow, that's interesting. What do you think was the number one or the biggest takeaway you took from that experience, and maybe the foreign game as well? Was there something that jumped out to you that you remember?
Well, it was interesting because they had me coach two younger club teams and then the men's team. The men's team was pretty well established. John had coached it the year before, so they'd been coached by Americans before. The club, you know, the lower level teams, a lot of those kids didn't speak English. So wow. I was sort of learning a little bit how to coach kids who didn't exactly understand you. And even one of my players, he was a fireman actually in real life, I guess, but about halfway through the season, one of the guys said, "You know, he doesn't understand a word you're saying to him," because he would always nod his head and say yes. And so what it made me do, I had to coach with a shot clock. So that's, I did have a little experience with that. And the other thing is, you're there from September till March, April. Oh. So, man, I ran out of stuff. I had to start looking for stuff to do. And it actually made me kind of expand the way I coached a little bit. The other thing it was really good for was practice. Some days you could be on half a court. Some days you may have six baskets. Some days two baskets. It made me learn how to use the space I was given to get as much done as I could. And that comes in handy when you're a high school coach and they tell you, you got a wrestling meet tonight and there's a ninth grade game in the second gym. And, you know, you're going to share the gym with this team or that team. You know, you get pretty good at becoming adaptable. So that was a good thing to learn from that experience.
Does it also help you communicate with freshmen? Because it's kind of like you're speaking a foreign language, or?
Well, I guess I have coached some pretty good freshmen, but if they're that good, they probably understood me. You know, I think that's Wyatt Lohaus knew what I was saying to him when he was a freshman. So, you know.
That's funny. Yeah. Talk about hard enough to kind of communicate what we're trying to get done and then have a language barrier in there as well. Definitely doesn't make that as easy as you would like.
No, it was good though. I mean, where I was at in my life, I think it was super good to get away. I'd never, you know, I left Iowa to play college basketball. I played at Winona State, but that's the first time I got really away from the Midwest. And you know, it's probably good to understand there's more going on out there in the world than just what we see in the Midwest. So I think it was really good. And when I got back, you know, that stuck out on my resume. I think it helped me get jobs.
Now, did you go knowing it was just going to be a 1 year thing, or what did the timeline or kind of how did that look like?
Well, I think I could have went back. I had at the time I had a young son and geez, I don't know if he's in fifth or sixth grade, and the school, he went with me, and the school system, the teacher didn't speak English, his teacher.
Oh,
and so I sent him back to go to school with my parents, where my parents live in Grundy Center. And so that kind of forced me, or it was the right thing to do to not go back. I had a couple opportunities, but I needed to get back here and I needed to find a teaching job. And I kind of came out of college at a time when if you applied for a PE teaching job, they'd say, hey, you got an interview. There were 500 applicants. That's good. Yeah. I said, well, that interview doesn't pay very well. I need a job. So it was just the right decision. I had to come home. And that first year back, I just subbed and coached at Cedar Rapids Jefferson. And then I got the job at West Liberty. And then I went and then I got the job at West a year later.
That's interesting. Yeah. So when the job came available at Iowa City West, was that something that you were like, this is, you know, what I've been waiting for? This is kind of the dream job, or were you kind of like, let's see what this chapter looks like?
Well, I had coached at City for a couple of years and worked in the study hall and the library. And then I was at Regina for a year. And so I was familiar with West. When I applied at West was, no, I remember one of the other coaches I knew from the league I was in at West Liberty told me it was a graveyard and I shouldn't go. And at that time, you know, we were a school about 800. City High really dominated athletics pretty well anyway at that point. And if you were a pretty good athlete, you know, you tended to gravitate over to City High. And so Bob Norton was the head coach and he was a Hall of Fame coach and he had stepped aside. So I looked into it and I talked to his assistant that I knew. And he said, there's really good potential here. There's things that maybe weren't being explored that I think you'll do. My son was now going to be in seventh or eighth grade, so he was going to join the program. They offered me the job. I have no idea if they offered it to four other people and got told no. But at that point, it was a tough job. And it took us a while, but it's a great place to live. It's a great place to raise a family. It's a really good place to be retired. So,
yeah,
they got great hospitals, right? So,
yeah, plenty to do, plenty of games to go to.
Yeah. So, I'd lived in Iowa City because my brother went to school at Iowa and I really liked Iowa City. I'd kind of hung around when Lute Olson was the coach. I got to know Steve Waite and Tom Norman and Dick Pace and all those guys and played basketball with them, Clay Hargrave. And so I was always kind of, that was sort of my orbit. So even when I went overseas, I came back to Iowa City. So it was a natural to look at the job, but it wasn't like, hey, you got to have that job. It was a leap of faith a little bit.
So you mentioned some of these guys you're hanging out with. I've heard a rumor about you going and catching a few intramural championships. Is that true as a University of Iowa, even though you never attended?
I took an online class, but
oh, okay.
You've listened to, you've done your scouting. You heard that on a podcast probably, but that is true. Norm Granger, there were football guys on that team. There were former Iowa basketball players. There's a bunch of good guys. You know, Norm Granger still referees our games, and I played with him, and he doesn't give me any calls, but, you know, yeah, I think the statute of limitations has probably run out on that. They're probably not going to come back and take my championship t-shirt back from me.
Yeah, probably. Was Coach Faith on that? Did he play with you guys on that, or where?
Coach Faith?
Yeah,
he played. Yeah.
Oh, good old DP. That's my guy, obviously, from Warburg. Yeah. So it's funny.
Well, I have a good connection to Waverly. You know, my uncle was a high school coach there for a long, long time, and my aunt worked at the bookstore at Warburg.
Oh, that's right. I think you and I actually talked about this last spring or something. So that's awesome. That's another good community right there, too. Waverly can't go wrong.
No, Waverly. Ackley is a little different. I'm not sure I could have ever lived there. But
it's better. You're right. It's better.
That might not be your retirement community there. Of
Ackley. I have that debate with Bryce Mines because he's an Ackley guy. So
he debates. I didn't know Smines debates.
It's not too sophisticated a debate. No, he's just a couple years younger than me. I remember playing football at Ackley. We were good. I mean, when I was at Grundy Center, I think we finished 7-1, but we played at Ackley, and it was one of those brutally cold nights, like late October. Man, I was so cold, and you're just shivering, and you're covering up, and out comes Ackley's coach. I think his name was Sid Sickles. He came running out in his shirt, you know, shirt sleeves, and all the players wouldn't wear any long sleeves. And I'm like, now looking back at it, we had no chance. Those guys were just crazier than we were. So
Just built different.
A little different.
Yeah, those different.
Those football guys are a little different than us basketball guys. We kind of like that climate control and, you know,
let's get in the gym. Let's get in the gym.
Yeah, we're civilized.
That's good. So once you got the job at Iowa City West, what was the first order of business? Was there something that you were like, all right, we got to get a youth program going. We got to do this. We got to do that. What were you got to start playing some defense, got to put in a new offense. What was the thought?
I inherited a really talented senior group, but they had not experienced any success and they didn't really know how to win. And to make it better, you know, the football team, I think, in that stretch didn't win a game like for 3 years. So they were coming off that into me. So you were battling that a little bit. And, you know, you had to change, you know, the word everyone would use today is change the culture. I guess I'm old. And we just had to learn how to win. And I remember City, I had a very good team. They may have been state runner up or state champs one of those years. And one of my first years, we led them both games by 10 with 4 minutes to go and lost both games.
Oh, geez.
Oof. Well, we just didn't know how to win, you know, and that was sort of that year. I mean, we won games. I think we won 14, but the problem was they talked my best player into going out for football, and halfway through football, he broke his arm.
Yep.
So we played without him for mostly half the year. And then he came back and we started winning better. And then we're going into tournaments. I think we have a chance. Like we were going into tournaments on an upswing. He got chicken pox.
Chicken pox.
So he didn't play. And we got beat. Rick Williams beat me over. He was at Jefferson then. So the next year, you know, almost everybody graduated. So we had a couple tough years in a row, and then things started to build. We obviously, what I did then was I really pushed the guys to go to the field house, and I was young enough that I went over there and played. So I was over there all the time, kind of keeping an eye on them and making sure they were getting into games and, you know, playing in the right games and playing the right way. That was that's where it kind of started. And then, you know, you get a couple kids who really want to buy in, and next thing you know, you're making progress. And got over the hump, I think 94 95. You know, we had good teams. We made the state tournament in, I think, 95. Should have been 94. We had a horrible draw. That was Ryan Bowen's senior year. They were super good. And Prairie was super good. And we were good. And we were all in the same area. Prairie ended up making it and finishing second. And we lost to Prairie. May have been an overtime game. It was super good game. So we could have made it in 94. We didn't. But then in 95, we started going to the state tournament. Took a while. It took, you know, 4 or 5 years. So
that's interesting. And I, Coach, you mentioned the field house. I'm sure that Brian and I have been in a few of those games before, at a younger age, probably, but, you know, such a benefit to have that so close to, you know, your school, and that your boys can go there. Tell people this all the time that, you know, as you get older, the game starts to slow down. So playing with those guys that it has slowed down for already. And, you know, obviously some really good games there, some really good players that play there, who might not necessarily be playing college basketball. So, you know, huge benefit there. Tarvino, you mentioned some of the players you've had. You've had some absolute studs. You know, obviously Glenn Worley, Jeremy Morgan, went to UNI. You know, a couple more that obviously went on to play college basketball. But how do you handle practices to keep them competitive with those guys, if anything's different at all?
Well, when I had those guys, I actually had other really good guys too.
That helps.
So yeah, I mean, the competition every day between Dondre Alexander and Jeremy Morgan was unbelievable. I mean, those two guys were buddies, but man, they did not want to lose to one another. And they'd take the simplest drill and make it competitive. I used to just laugh. And, you know, when Wyatt was playing, he was his senior year, he was playing with Connor McCaffrey and Devontae Lane. David DeLeo was a junior. They were, and then our kids from 8 to 14 were good. They would have been super good players at a smaller, you know, a lot of smaller schools. So they got, you know, they got better. The other thing we do is we do a lot of 4-on-4 stuff. So we take our top 8 and split them in half and make them play against each other. And I think that's something, you know, now the lingo is small-sided games. Well, we were doing small-sided games a long, long time ago. You know, the one thing I had this conversation with Connor, I said, I've never had a guy average 20 points a game. Jeremy Morgan was Gatorade Player of the Year. I think he averaged 11, but his intangibles were off the chart. You know, he could guard anybody, and he did everything well. And Connor, I said, Connor, you may not average 20 here. And he told me a few years ago, he said, you know, I did. I said, barely. You know, so we've always kind of, if you show me a team with one super good player, we got a chance to beat them. You know, I usually have somebody who can guard you. You know, we battled Marcus Page over and over. And Dondre Alexander gave him as hard a time as probably anybody. I don't know if you ask Marcus that now, but I'm sure he did not like playing against Dondre. And I've always felt like we have to have balance, and I've always kind of been a motion guy. So everybody's touching the ball. When I watch a team play where it's high ball screen, I always think, and you know what, some of those teams are great and those coaches are doing a great job with them. But I always think I wouldn't want to be one of those three guys that stand and watch those two do all the playing. I'm a dinosaur though. And I know that a lot of that stuff is not the way people are playing now. We've changed. We're probably not anywhere near as much a motion team as we were, but we were almost every year because I was convinced that it helped our defense get better. And the defense was what it was all about. I mean, I went back and looked at a game where Glenn Worley played in 2000, our state tournament games. I don't know why I watched them, but I was watching them and I'm like, oh my God, were we bad on offense? And we turned it over a lot, but the other team couldn't score. And it kind of reminds you, well, going to the football game reminded me of that yesterday too, that you can win a lot of games with a really good defense. And it's been our struggle, actually, the last 2-3 years. We've struggled on defense. And so, you know, anything this team does, we've got to figure it out on defense.
Well, you mentioned a little bit of that change. It's going to be a loaded question, but how has your, I guess, overall coaching philosophy changed, you know, over the years? Obviously, the game has changed a lot. How has your philosophy, coaching philosophy changed specifically?
Well, the guys that played for me in the 90s say that I'm really a lot nicer.
Well, yeah, they always do, right?
Yeah.
But it's probably true. You know, things have changed. Like when you guys played, what was acceptable is not really acceptable now. And
right.
And so you change. Philosophically, it's just little things. I really like to do a lot of the Princeton stuff. I think Princeton is probably as close as you can get to motion without it being motion. So there's a little more structure. What I was finding with our motion was, and we've changed that. I mean, I was the original read Bob Knight's book and do everything he did, you know, short of throwing chairs and all that stuff. So I just got very frustrated with all that time we spent teaching the down screen and the reads, and then maybe 3 out of 10 kids actually learned it. So I went to some more read and react motion, which is cutting, back screening, driving. And that's what we ran in that when we had all those good teams in the 2010s. And the last few years, we've been trying to teach it. We've tried to modify it. Man, we've had trouble. You know, I can't tell you how many times I went in at half and said, I don't think we had a good possession of motion. So I just finally this year decided we're going to do, we've always run Princeton sets, and we're just kind of going to more Princeton, I guess. And there'll still be a lot of motion concepts in there. But so I've changed. I guess I've gotten a lot more since I retired from teaching. I have more time, and there's so much stuff on YouTube that I just like watching it and thinking, how would that fit in? And yet again, you don't want to throw everything out, you know? So,
right.
We've changed how we play defense. I mean, mainly it's just how quick are we? If we're quick, we'll play our man a different way than if we're big and slow. And we've been bigger and slower lately. And I think we'll be a little more athletic this year. And then the last 10 years, I've really like to throw in the 1-3-1. It helps when you have a guy like Patrick McCaffrey playing on top of it.
Yeah, that does help.
Yeah.
And we have had 3 or 4 guys like him. And then we, like I said, we got bigger and we got slower and we couldn't play it. But I think this will be a good team to play 1-3-1 with. So we've messed around with that a little bit too.
How has the shot clock impact your philosophy or style at all?
Not much. I mean, you know, we played in a state final against Valley, and we played in a lot of state tournament games that were super low scoring.
It looks like you're allergic to the 70s for sure here in your state tournament run.
if you look in that run, well, 2012 through 2019, until 19, I think we averaged 70 points a game, which would be 85, 90 in college. So we weren't playing slow. Truth be told, during those years, if anybody's holding the ball, it was being done against us. I mean, right. We played several teams who held the ball, but in super high profile games against teams who are your equals, we just played slower. I mean, Valley played this spread out. They had all those long guys. They played a spread out 1-2-2. Connor McCaffrey was hurt. That was not a very good shooting team that I had. And so, you know, at halftime, you got 15 points and everybody's saying, slow down basketball. You need a shot clock. And I'm like, I wish we had a shot clock the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I would have benefited.
Help on defense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, last year, it maybe affected 3 possessions a game.
That's all right.
Yeah, we were playing in a fall league, and of course I wasn't coaching, but I was watching. We were at Centennial, and we were playing our second game, and somebody said, we didn't really come close to the shot clock going off. I go, we're playing with the shot clock? I didn't even know we were playing with the shot clock. I like to run. I mean, if you think about those Jeremy Morgan teams, we would hit a spot where we would just blitz you 12-0. And we did it with our defense, but then we were running. And those teams scored in the 70s all the time. But, yeah, it I don't love playing slow, but if you're if you have a talent deficit, it gives you a chance, you know. And I think there's still ways to do it, you know, to kind of take advantage. Okay, we're not as good as this team. You know, we played the one year we made the state tournament with an under 500 record. Our first round opponent was Doug McDermott. I don't know if you've heard of these guys. Harrison Barnes.
I'm gonna have to look him up.
Yeah, that was our first round opponent, and I seriously thought about trying to hold the ball. And then I thought, well, we're not even a winning record team. I don't think we're gonna be able to hold.
Yeah.
So kind of hung in there. We played slow. We ran kind of a ball screen continuity, which I never did, but when Ali Farouk-Manesh was getting when he was at Kirkwood and he was getting recruited, he called me one day and said, "Are you guys practicing today? It was a snowstorm." And I said, "No." He said, "Come up to our practice. Coach Majerus is going to be there." So I sat there and talked to him the whole practice. And he had talked about ball screen offenses. And the thing he said to me that stuck in my head was he said, it's really good when you have a talent deficit. You can kind of control the tempo. You can kind of control who gets the shots. So that was ringing around in my head. So we put that in when we, you know, that season when we weren't very good, and we tried it against Ames, but eventually the dam broke and we were down 20. Right. I don't think Doug didn't even start on that team possibly. And
he blooms late on that team.
Yeah. He was 100% that day, you know, so he was good. And, you know, Harrison, I watched prior. Yeah, I didn't think we had much of a chance, but you just got to do it for your guys. You know, I probably watched 12 games, and Harrison just turned it on when he had to, but he could have wanted to. You know, he just kind of went with the flow, and then all of a sudden you go, "Well, he hadn't done much," and then 3 minutes later he's got 14 more points.
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah,
he was scary that way. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. So take me back as we're kind of reminiscing a little bit. Take me to 98 then. So this would be Glenn Worley's sophomore year. Obviously, state championship kind of started things off for you guys. You beat Hoover in the championship 1.1, 46-45 on that one. First one always the best? Or what do you think?
Well, we definitely got – what was memorable was Hoover was super good. They had David Newman. They had the 6'9 kid that played at Drake. I'm forgetting his name. They were good, and they were super well coached. I mean, Bobby Sanquist was a great coach. I knew him before that. We went somewhere for breakfast that day, and then we went somewhere for a shoot around, and everywhere we went they'd say, "Oh, are you in the finals?" "Yeah." "Who are you playing?" "Hoover." "Oh yeah, you're not beating them, you know." So I thought we had a good plan. It was a slow game, but they were similar to us. They were nationally ranked. We were definitely the underdogs. What happened was Glenn was always in foul trouble. So as soon as he would get into foul trouble, we would go five out and just start cutting. And we would run a minute if we had to, but we were just buying time, you know, for Glenn.
Right.
And we had some other really good players. Again, it's hard to remember.
But that's a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin Long was a kid who played. And then Ryan Baumgart was, I don't know, Ryan Baumgart went to Grandview, and he went to Kirkwood. They won a national title, and then he went to Grandview. He was a stud. He could guard anybody. And Bruce Davis, who's Calvin Davis's older brother, we had a good team. We weren't quite their caliber, you know, but we controlled the tempo well, and Glenn was the best player on the court, you know, and came down as a very controversial game. Bob Sanquist and I have talked about it a little bit, and he said he's never watched it again. And, you know, we got fouled with no time on the clock, and Glenn made it 3-3-1.
That's right. I remember that now that you say that. I do.
So as we were walking off, Hoover, their crowd at Vets, and that place was full. At least we had no one there. We had no one there, but Hoover had that whole side full. And they had these little yellow and green megaphones. And I'd never been hit by so many megaphones in my life walking off the court, but it didn't bother me much. So
That's a good reason to get hit by a megaphone.
I say, yeah, not when you're walking off with the trophy as well. So that's right. I forget that. I do. Now that you say that, I remember that that happening with the foul called and having to make the free throws. To get
one. When he made one, we were ahead. And I don't think he shot the second one. So he got fouled. There was time on the clock. And I've always told Bob, I think if you'd watch it, you'd feel better. But he wouldn't feel better because, you know, that was going to win.
Right, exactly.
And we won it probably a year earlier than I thought we would. And then, of course, the next year we dealt with all the – okay, we wanted as sophomores, it's a sure thing for 3 years. And then we got upset and sub-state. And then when there were seniors, we beat, I think we beat
Johnston.
Yeah, they had Whiskey.
I say, because I don't remember. I remember that. I remember the 2000 championship as well. I was there for that one. But I was trying to remember who Johnston had, and I couldn't remember. I was like, I can't remember if they snuck in there or if they were supposed to be there or what the deal was.
Oh, they were good. They had Mike Cameron, who went to BV and had a really good career
there. That's right, yeah.
And Quinn Sitnewski, who about broke Glenn's arm at one point. I think he could have snapped it like a twig. that was a tough year for us. We won that. I think we were 14-7, maybe, or 16-7. So we won the state football playoff that year. The finals was us and Cedar Falls. I remember I just got my first cell phone. I went to the dome, you know, as a basketball coach, you got some guys out there and I'm thinking just nobody get hurt. I hope we win. We're already in the final and we need to win, but no one gets hurt. So I go watch the game. It goes to overtime. We score in overtime and then we force a turnover. So we win. I run out of the dome. I go outside. I call home, tell my wife, it was perfect. We won. Nobody got hurt. I came home and we had practice the next morning and I always sweep the floor. So I'm out there sweeping the floor and one of my players, Seth Schroeder's giving me a look and he's with somebody else, maybe Glenn, and like, how you doing this morning? I said, I'm good. This is a great deal. Seth says, you're not mad? I go, why would I be mad? He said, well, Nate Keating broke his collarbone in the pileup in the victory celebration. He's out for 6 weeks.
Yeah, that made me mad.
No kidding.
So we lost 3 or 4 times when he was out. And we scheduled super tough that year. I think our last game of the year, I know it was, Minneapolis De La Salle came down here and played us. And they had Ben Johnson, who's now the current Minnesota coach, and Derek Robinson, who played D tackle at Iowa. They were good. And it was a good game for us. So we went into the tournament with 7 losses and we lost our last game. And so it wasn't easy. You know, we've won several state championships, but that was the one that we had to work the hardest for. And just nothing ever came easy. And I was thinking about Valley and what they're going through because they kind of won it a year earlier than everybody thought they would. Yeah. And BJ and I have not talked about it, but that's tough. That's really tough, especially that next year. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, and I know they've had a bad injury but it'll be interesting, you know, and he and I know each other well enough. He'll tell me how it went. So
for sure, that's good. You had the tailback was your point guard on that team too, right? He played at Iowa, didn't he? I'm sorry, I forgot his name too, but I just was remembering when you were talking about football players.
I had Joe Walker, who was Rich Walker's son.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep,
That was 2000. Yeah. No, I can't remember. In 98, I had Bruce Davis. He was a good football player, but he went to South Dakota. And I don't know if I ever had a tailback. Really? I've had football players. My only professional, major league guy was Nate Keating. So
he's a great basketball.
Very good. Yeah, a lot of good names.
For sure. Yeah. Well, and I want to get to a few more of those here, but I was just curious. So from 2000 then to 2012, did you do any coaching or what was the deal?
Well, we were good in 2002.
That's right.
Yeah, we were good. And Justin Wick was on that team. And the younger Baumgart. And I'm missing some guys. But that was a really good team. We were undefeated. And we were ranked number one. We went to East that year and beat them at the buzzer at their place. And the funny thing about that was the stretch where City High had Boo Hill, Warren McDuffie, Calvin Davis. I mean, they were loaded. When they were freshmen, they were beating people by 50. Their junior year, Brad Baumgart gets hurt, and we can't beat them. Like, we're right there, but we can't beat them. And they ended up finishing, I think, third in the state tournament. And that's the year Denny Thiessen passed away, actually, shortly after the season. And so they had a new coach, but they were loaded. They had all seniors. And I remember talking to another coach, and he said, "How are you going to be?" I said, "I think we're really good," because all our guys were back pretty much. And he's like, "Yeah, but you're not going to be better than them." And I said, "Well, okay." And I think we played them three times, and we beat them about by 75 points. But we had such good chemistry, and we had to play them in the sub-state final, because back then the state was never going to split us up. Done a great job with that now. But just long story short, Justin Wick got hurt. And he played, but he couldn't practice for 10 days. So then he got hurt again in the first round game, which we played Muscatine, and we didn't really need him in that game. But then we played East in the semis, and we led most that game. But Justin just really was struggling with his stamina. And it came down the last couple plays. And it's funny, we had the same refereeing crew we had for the Hoover game. And so I didn't agree with a couple of calls, but I figured we were kind of even. So that
would have been the Waterloo East with like Mike Henderson, Carlton Reed.
All those guys. They were loaded. I mean,
they were loaded.
They would take any shot because it didn't matter, because they were just Mylon Moses. They were just a rebound
on the team.
We had two super good games with them. And we won the consolation easy. And then I think they kind of overlooked Sioux City East the next night. And East was good.
Jacobson. That was Ben Jacobson, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I would have liked to have had a shot at Sioux City East. I think we could have won that game. And then the next two, 3 years we just had a bubble of just not quite as talented of kids and kids who maybe didn't put as much time into basketball. It was only a couple of years though. And then luckily, Ali's mom took the job at the volleyball job at Iowa.
At Iowa, yeah.
and he really helped us get things going in the right direction. His junior year, we made the state tournament, but we hit the first Bohannon state championship.
We played
them semis, and it was
that
a good,
was good.
Yeah, and then a kid that played for me that went to Drake, he walked on a Drake, Cody Roosh, was pretty important to us, and he ripped his ankle up in the first round game, and he played, but man, I don't know how. That didn't help, and we had beaten them in the regular season at our place. Ali shot crazy. And we beat them, but they beat us in the one that mattered. And then there for a while, was that at Wells Fargo? No, that was the last year maybe at Vets.
Seven, right?
Yeah. Seven. Then we were making it every so often, but we lost in the first round. I remember thinking, am I ever going to win a game in this damn building? You know, because I went with Jordan Sturmer's team. And Zach Derby, AJ Derby, We played Bettendorf, and we just laid an egg. I think I probably overprepared for that game. I had lots of help on that. You know, Kevin was running Kevin Skillet was running all the Bulls triangle stuff, and one of his opponents clued me in on how to guard it. And I think I almost just overcoached our guys because we just played awful. And I remember the media session, they're like, what happened? I said, it had to be alien abduction. I can't figure out what else could have caused us to play like that. They just abducted all my players. And they sent guys that didn't know how to play.
That's funny. Good
line, but that was a tough one. The next year, you know, we had some transfer out type thing. We were going to be pretty good again, and we got beat in the sub-state final. Mm-hmm. You know, we were competitive in that stretch. But yeah. When Jeremy and Dondre were freshmen, they played, we kind of took our lumps and got beat in the first or second round of sub-state. And then the next year we played on the last day of the season for like 9 straight years. So we had a lot of players.
Yeah. You'll take that. So going on this run a little bit, we'll kind of, I do want to go over that, that 3-year run from 12 to 14, you know, obviously, Jeremy Morgan, his junior year in 12, you guys got another one. That would have been, you mentioned it earlier, but playing Marcus Page and Lindmar in the semis, you beat those guys by 20 in the semis, and then went and played that Sioux City East team with Woodbury to get that first one with Morgan as his junior year. And finally kind of breaking in Wells Fargo, you had to feel pretty good then, getting over the hump and being able to get your first of what would end up being 3 in a row at Wells Fargo. But as we're on that topic, what's the biggest difference from Wells to Vets, just from an atmosphere, team standpoint, everything?
The locker rooms are not the saunas.
Right.
Vets was tough. You know, if you got the Barnstormers locker room, it was cool. But when you're in one of those other ones and some team just took a shower in there right before you got there, it's like, oh my God, we got to get out of here. It's 150 degrees. But yeah. I grew up, you know, in Grundy Center. I went to the state tournament when my cousin played in 1971. And we got snowed in and we slept there. So
that's crazy.
Then in 75, when I was a junior, we got beat in the state finals by Clinton St. Mary's. I was a late bloomer, actually. I was the youngest guy in my class, and I didn't play much, but we had good players, you know, a couple college guys, and probably, I don't know, Tim Clark was probably, he was kind of a phenom, he was a sophomore, and then we had a kid named Oren Brown, who was a good player that played at Winona State with me, actually. And so, you know, I had – and then my uncle, I think, coached there 11, 12 times, and I went to all those games. And so, I, you know, my dad, my uncle, played on the first state tournament team from Grundy Center in 1952.
Wow.
So I've always kind of, they didn't play at Vets. They actually played at the Fieldhouse, but I had a history at Vets. And so it, you know, I've always kind of had it pounded into my head that state tournament was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And it was to our family anyway. And so when we moved out of Vets, I wasn't sure, but Wells Fargo it's different. It's nice. You're not playing in front of quite as loud a crowd sometimes. I have trouble figuring out where the scoreboard is sometimes, but obviously great memories there too. You know, Wyatt Lowhouse had a heart condition the whole time he was in high school. And so his dad was always near us, you know, just to help him take care of it. Cause when his heart would go out of rhythm, he would have to stick his face in a bucket of ice water. And so Brad was always there. And Brad told me a few years ago that, after we won our last state title with Wyatt, he's probably the only guy that could do it, but there was a tile ceiling in our locker room, and he went in there and he put the ice bucket up there, and he says it's still up, it's still there, I know it is because I hit it. So we got a little history there, and I mean, lots of good memories. The last couple times we've gone, we've struggled there, but man, we've lost to good teams, and we haven't been there for a while. So I'm hoping I get a coach there again at some point.
Anxious to get back. Absolutely. Yep. Well, so, and I mean, you kind of mentioned it too. So going through 13, obviously Morgan's senior year, you guys beat Bettendorf. And then in 14, Wyatt's senior year that you just mentioned beat Valley to get that one. And so then put the ice bucket up there in 14. Was it there in 17 then when you guys got another one with Connor's senior year and you beat Valley on that one?
He didn't tell me about it until just a few years ago.
Oh, geez, that would have been the best. Yeah. Check back in 17 to see.
In 15, we beat, who'd you say, Valley. But the game was with Bettendorf. You know, Nicholas Bear and Cole Clearman, that was the game. And once we got by that, Valley seemed, you know. And Valley took it to us then a year or two later. But
in 16, Valley got theirs, yep.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, we were right there in 16 too, you know, when David DeLeo was a senior. We got beat by North Scott, who won the state tournament. And, you know, when we lost to good teams. Even this last trip, you know, Ankeny beat us, and we played them tough. And then they really romped through the tournament from that point.
Same thing in 18, too. You lost to Cedar Falls, which AJ Green and eventually champs as well. That would have been Patrick's junior year. So, yeah, going back through it, I mean, you're definitely, like you said, you're definitely playing good teams. And it's funny for me to look back to see who was on that team. And like you said, there's usually a star or two or a phenom that comes across. And so, that's good. So obviously a very much a regular down here in Des Moines, both at Vets and at Wells. Do you guys always stay at the same place, or what does that look like for you when you come down? You got to know your way around pretty good.
So you get superstitious, right? Well, when we won our first one, we were at Hotel Fort Des Moines. So then we stayed there for a long time. And then of course it closed to be redone. And we started staying next to the Drake Diner. And we lost there most of the time, but we did win in 17 there. So I'm not that superstitious now. We can stay anywhere. I just hope we get to do it again. So
that's
funny. Good. You know, coaches with a lot of experience, you know, obviously have learned a lot over the years, probably learned a lot of things that they learned earlier in the career would maybe not right in there, you know, in the past few years. But what would your advice be for a first year head coach Bergman?
Calm down. I did a lot of things right. Like someone told me go work camps. So I did that. You know, I worked Lute Olson's camp. He had it 4 weeks. I worked it 4 weeks. And I would always go to the guy running the camp and say, give me a different station this week. So I learned how to teach at Lute Olson's camp, you know, and then we, you know, we'd go to UD to camp or, you know, and you're always hanging around other coaches who are good. I mean, that's where I met Gordon Rundquist and Al Marshall and all those guys. The biggest thing was I probably had too big a chip on my shoulder, you know? And so at that point you thought every ref was out to get you, and you know, and now you just know that's not what's going on. You know, if there's a bad call, they just messed it up. Or maybe that guy's just not having a good night, you know, but I don't think they ever were out to get me, but I sure thought that when I was 25 years old, you know, and I probably spent too much time thinking about them. But, you know, I think I was probably too hard on kids, and, you know, it was a different world and you could do it. But in hindsight, there's got to be a way to coach them and not just be zero tolerance on everything type thing. So, that's probably, if I have a regret, that would be a regret. I have good relationships with a lot of ex-players, but, you know, you could always do better in that area, I think.
What, with that being said, because I think you're right that, you know, we've mentioned it a couple of times in our conversation here, but how do you, I mean, because obviously in the day when you're talking, you know, you could can maybe do a lot more things, you know, with the kids in practice. How do you coach mental toughness? You know, nowadays, you know, with the current climate, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. Cause honestly, you know, as we've talked about, you know, you mentioned Bobby Knight. I mean, that style of coaching is not, is not allowed anymore. How do you help your players or develop your players' mental toughness these days?
I've always felt like that's what I did better than anything. I've never been an X and O guy. I mean, it's not like I don't have a clue, but I always felt like if I could teach a team to not give in, that was the most important thing I could teach them. That has gotten harder. And I think I've just got to be more creative. You know, I went to the IBCA clinic a couple weeks ago and listened to some really good young guys. And I think they're more tuned into that than I was. You know, it's a different era. And I think they've figured out ways to maybe motivate without making it, you know, you're getting upset or, you know, I mean, I coach forever. I still do, like, do this right or we'll do it all day, or do this right or we're going to go run. You know, there's probably, I always knew you couldn't do that every day. You couldn't go make everything competitive and the losers suffer all the time. But I probably leaned on that. And I think I have to figure out a way to maybe teach that mental toughness without all that stuff, or at least less of that, of at least the, okay, we're going to do this. I mean, we used to do a thing called 35-second perfection, and every time they messed up on defense, it went back to 35, so they could be out there like for 10 minutes playing defense. And I used to just grade it super hard, like, yeah, he's out of his stance. You know, up, he didn't jump the ball. And now I think you're just not going to have as much success doing that as I probably did 15 years ago. But the kids are all really good kids. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound like that angry old man yelling at the kid walking across my lawn. They're really good kids. They're different. I mean, you know, AAU's changed things a little bit. And the other thing is everybody's got skills, people, you know, and so kids are way more skilled than my players were 20 years ago. But, and I had this conversation with Ali about them recruiting people, and he said, kids are super great at workouts. They're not so good at playing. They don't play enough. They don't understand how. And so I think, you know, that's one of those things. That's part of mental toughness too, right? I mean, we had bad injuries. Like, you know, we had a Kareem Earl got hurt in the middle of the year, and we were playing great. And our margin of error is not as big as it was maybe 8-10 years ago. And we lost 6 games in a row by 9 points. Mm-hmm. And we led all those games at some point late, but we just couldn't figure out a way to win. And man, I really wanted to get mad about it, but I wasn't going to do anybody any good. They were trying, like, we just didn't make the plays, you know? And so I'm thinking our guys maybe this year will benefit from having gone through that. It was really, really tough. You know, we just, that's something this team in particular, that's what they're going to hear from me constantly, is we have to learn how to be tougher mentally.
They need to get up to the field house and have about four teams waiting. Then you'll learn how to win. Cause if you don't win, you're going to wait an hour, right, to get on the floor.
And the field house is not what it was, obviously.
No, it's not. Cause right? They're down at the new rec, right? They don't even have the runs up at the field house.
And I've never been in that place. I rode my bike around it, but I never walked. So
not the same.
No, not the same. Yeah, it's not the same. I mean, and the guy that ran the field house was one of my players' parents, and he came to me about a year before it was going to happen and warned me. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Hey, the kids are going to have to pay to get in here. I hate it, because it was famous for just being the place anybody could go and play.
Oh, yeah. Restaurants, yeah."
And, mm-hmm. And we never had open gyms. The one thing I did do when I moved here is I was involved with Prime Time, and I was friends with Randy Larson. And in the fall, in the spring before Prime Time, we had three courts, and he would invite all the local Prime Time guys. And I made a deal with him. I said, I need eight of my guys to be able to get in those games. And so my guys were playing with all those, a lot of guys. Yeah, they weren't all college guys, because Randy would always have guys like me that played a lot, but you know, we weren't in college anymore. Mm-hmm. And some college guys, I remember Paul Burmeister is a West High grad, and he came back and played in that. Lon Olenzak, I remember him coming over and playing, and that was great for my kids. Like, there were one of them on each team, and they were playing with five smart players who did not want to lose. But eventually that got, I don't know, I don't think it was legal at some point, or yeah, we didn't do it after mm-hmm. a while. And eventually we started having not so much open gyms as I got really lucky with Brad Lowhouse. I mean, he did a great job with those guys in the off season. And so just a couple days a week, they'd work with Brad, and that's kind of where we're at now, as I try to get somebody to work with our guys, and at least they're getting some kind of structure, and you know, if the person is okay to teach some of our system, they do, but it, you know, it is what it is. I keep hearing the state's going to give us time with these kids, and it really would help. Especially now, like, we're trying to get ready for our first game. We have 11 practices, you know.
Right. So. You mentioned a little bit about, you know, some of the kids that you've coached, their development of skills over the years. How important, and then maybe if you could go into a little bit of, about how it's run, how important, and how do you run your youth program, your youth hoops program?
Youth program is hard in Iowa City. My first year, I took it on, and I think we had 10, that's a long time ago, but 8 to 12 elementaries that fed West. Mm-hmm. And I scheduled a week-long night camp, so 5 nights throughout the whole fall. So every elementary had 1 5-day session with me and my assistant, and I probably hired a couple of kids to help me. Oh my gosh, by the time we got to the first practice, I think I was burned out. And, you know, we had kids then in North Liberty and Hills and Iowa City and Coralville. And so that's always been a bit of a challenge. When I moved here, we had a basketball league and they didn't keep score. And so I would work with the coaches on that a little bit. And it was girls and boys. And that was probably there my first 8-10 years, and eventually went away because nobody wanted to play and not keep score. I mean, which to me is a bad thing, but mm-hmm. I like that league. I'll tell you, the best feeder system, and we started a thing called Thunder and worked with our 7th and 8th graders, because our 7th and 8th grade season is 6 weeks long. I mean, when I was at West mm-hmm. Liberty, it was 3 months. At Iowa City West, it's 6 weeks. And they play 8 games. And they practice for a week, 2 weeks, and they're playing. So we started doing something after the first of the year. They're in their season right now, the 7th and 8th grade. After Christmas, I would get gym time, and I found, he's the Marion coach now, Pete Messerly. I found Pat McCool, did it for me, who was one of my old coaches. And we'd have 20 skill sessions. And so the kids that we identified, we'd invite them to that. And they'd all pay a little bit of money so I could pay the coach. And we did that for a while. We tried to do stuff bigger than that. But the truth is, every time I had a good team, I had a dad who had a basketball background who pulled all the good players in that grade together and took them out and played. Justin Wick's dad, Brad Lowhouse, Michael Morgan. Yeah, I mean, and now AAU is kind of, mm-hmm. the kids are in AAU. I mean, almost everybody's on an AAU team. And that's very different than Yeah, when Glenn played, I think Martin Brothers was the only game in town, probably.
Yep.
So that's changed. And, you know, I'm not one of those guys who says, bah, humbug, AU. I mean, if you had 16-year-old Steve Bergman and said, hey, you want to go play basketball in Dallas and Milwaukee and Chicago, and, you know, we only play like 3-4 games, but we'll be in a hotel playing you know, blackjack the rest of the time, I'm in. I would have loved to have done it. Yeah. It's different. And you have to almost explain that to your guys. Like, it's almost like softball and baseball. I mean, it's different. When you come play for me, we're going to watch film. We're going to have scouting reports. We're going to practice a lot. And that's not, I mean, some AAU programs are doing some of that, but most of them aren't. So, you know, you just got to convince them that what you're doing, if they want to be a college player, college is going to be more like what we're doing.
Right.
You know? And I will say, I've had a lot of kids go to college and I've had a lot of kids play right away. So I've always felt like we play so much man, we run motion, we don't feature one guy. I think they're pretty well prepared for college.
Yeah, that transition is definitely easier for those kids when they've come from a style and a system in which has prepared them, or that is, they're used to that. And to your point too, with AAU, sometimes it's hard because, like you said, the difference between baseball and softball, it's, you're sort of playing the same game, but yeah, there's quite a few differences. And those kids oftentimes are going to go to the club or the team that fits their style the best, not right. necessarily that, you know, now I need to fit into this style, and this is different than what I've been playing for the last 5 months, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you always ask them, how many times you get taken out for taking a bad shot?
Never.
Or playing no defense. And most of them will say never.
There's no bad shots.
Yeah. And so, well, they're going to get told they took a bad shot occasionally with me, you know, and I'm going to tell them why. And I'm going to tell them, I think you're a good shooter. Just take better shots, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
And you might have to get a defensive stance, too. I don't know how many defensive stances there are.
Not much.
Yeah, not many.
On many of those. So that's good. Well, good. You know, going through here, Coach, one of the things that I just wanted to touch on here is, you mentioned it, maybe it's retirement, but your professional development, you're kind of starting to, I think we got a follow from the new Twitter page. I know you've been putting some stuff out on YouTube. I mean, you've been watching stuff on YouTube. How's this? you catching up with the times here, and well, really starting to help your professional development, or what's the deal, Coach?
I have nothing to do with that Twitter page. YouTube, what I did during COVID was I took all our old state tournament games and ripped them and put them up on YouTube. And then I started to see all the content out there. And, okay, you want to run Princeton? Man, there's 50 things out there for Princeton. And, you know, the small-sided games and, you know, and I'm not teaching, so there's more time to do it, you know. And back when I used to teach all day and then get home at 10 o'clock after practice, you didn't want to watch YouTube. So, you know, it's Don Showalter told me, because he did it, you know, he retired from teaching and he kept coaching. He said, I think you're really going to like how it is. And I have. You know, having said that, I'm, you know, me and Fontana are the same age. So, well, I'm not trying to outlast him. Maybe he's not trying to outlast me, but I still enjoy it. I'm excited about tomorrow.
Yeah, that's definitely fun. And like you said, it's getting a little bit of that time back will just allow you to continue to master your craft. So I'll be anxious to see how you continue to grow, Coach.
Well, I hope I don't grow out. You know, and I don't need my stomach growing anymore. So
grow mentally.
Yeah. It excites me. I mean, just looking at new things and trying, you know, you don't want to just throw everything out, but
mm-hmm.
you need to, I think I got pretty stale after our first run in the 90s. And I remember going to clinics and I'd go hang out with Brad Bjork and talk to him. And now I like going to the clinics. Bob McKillop a couple of weeks ago was awesome. Like that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, we like to end our episodes here, Coach, with a section we call Rapid Fire, where Brian's going to ask you a couple questions, a few about hoops, a few not, and you just let us know what comes to the top of your head.
All right, take into account my age. There's nothing rapid anymore. So,
I think you'll be all right with this. Yeah.
Okay.
What's your favorite visiting gym or arena you've had the opportunity to coach in?
Quincy. Quincy's cool. We've played down there in their invite thing three or four times. I think it was built 1912. Their locker room is unbelievable. And they know us, so they always put us in their varsity locker room. It's fun. We don't win down there very often. We are always playing. I'm trying to think. We've played super good teams. We played a team from Philadelphia the last time we went down there, and we played team Kansas City. And the other one, I mean, I don't want to give short shrift to Iowa, but we've played at Hopkins a number of times, and that's always cool. But we're always playing. We're playing Apple Valley, or we're playing Hopkins or De La Salle up there. So, and they pack that place. Yeah, they pack that place. They have great games going all day. So those are two places that Quincy is, if you've never been there, I think it'd be worth driving down there just to see a game.
That's cool. That's a good one. I like that. Like new ones on the list. Game day routine. What does game day look like for you? Is there something that you have to do? Any superstitions along the way, or what does that look like?
Kind of past that, I guess. But there for a while, I had to take a shower a certain way before the game. But then I started to realize that when I didn't have quite as good of players, those superstitions didn't work very well. Or maybe I did a good job of coaching, but. No, not much. I mean, it's different now because we do, I get over there, we'll do a shoot around and game days are my shortest days. All we have is a game and a shoot around, where on a practice day, I've got to get ready for practice, which takes a couple hours, and then a 3-hour practice. So game days are pretty, I got to figure out something to do on game days.
To keep your mind off of you might overcoach it again.
I might.
Let's go. What's your favorite sports movie?
Field of Dreams.
That's two in a row, Adam. Coach Helly said that too.
Yeah, I like Field of Dreams. Of course, I went there last year and watched the Cubs play there last year at the Field of Dreams game. So that's big cool, Cubs. Big. So very frustrated human being.
So. Oh man! Well, so I know, obviously, being in and around the Iowa City area for a long time, also a big Hawk fan. And so, what do you have for me for your all-time Hawkeye starting five? I know this puts you in a little bit of a tough spot with some alum, but I'll let you work through that. But all-time Hawkeye starting five, what do you got? Well, who's rolling out there?
Don Lester.
Okay.
Connor, Patrick, Justin Wick, Evan. No. Of course, I loved watching Connor the last few years. But, if we're talking about the Mount Rushmore, I'm more of a, Michael Payne, that era. But obviously, there have been some good ones. That's super hard because I cover about five decades. I remember watching Sam Williams play in 66 and Glenn Vindovic, and Mike Gatens would tell you Glenn Vindovic is the best player I ever saw play. So maybe I better put him on there.
There you go.
That team, I can't go with Dick or Tom Norman, but, or Steve Waite, those are my buddies, but they were on a very good, very good team. But Ronnie was the guy that made that all go.
Tell me about Dick's game a little bit. What was Coach Pate? What did he do out there?
He was crafty.
Okay.
He was smart. He was a really good athlete. I mean, he played Big Ten baseball. He played baseball and basketball. He was like the first Connor. He played baseball and basketball at
Crazy.
It was nuts. He would come down the court in a 2-on-1 and he'd give you like he was going to go behind his back and then he'd bring it back and lay it in. That was the move I always remember about Dick.
Wow, Dickie.
He was tough.
Ahead of his time, it sounds like.
Super tough mentally. And, you know, that was the first team that got me really excited about Iowa was the Final Four team. But there have been so many good players since. I mean, you know, guys that, you know, I coached against the Murrays when they were tiny little guys in ninth grade. And look at what they've turned into. So that Luca, those guys could all be on that. I mean, they're National Player of the Year guys. So
Right. They're
pretty good. And, you know, it's just to say five, you know, when I went on Connor's podcast, he tried to get me to name it the five all-time West Eye guys, but I wasn't playing that game with him. So.
Well, that's funny because Tony Rowe wanted me to ask the same question, and I'm like, I don't know if he's going to answer that.
No.
It's too hard as a coach to put somebody in that spot.
Tony Rowe, you know, was my paper boy.
Yep.
Yeah, he was my paper boy. And Tony Rowe's dad played on the team when I coached at Regina, and he was in my wife's class.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. Lots of connections to Tony.
Lots of connections. He's my paper boy. So
That's awesome. So fishing or golfing, which one you choosing?
Fishing. I got a house on a lake now. So.
Oh, where at?
Delhi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Went back up there where Coach Rundquist coached forever and Paul, that's where he grew up. And now I'm living at the lake by there. So
there you go. Good for you. Yeah. Good for you. Do you have a favorite golf course in Iowa?
I love Finkbine, and I worked there for a long time, so I've played it a bunch. Davenport Country Club's where my brother belonged, and that's super nice. The one down in Burlington, Spirit Hollow. But Finkbine. Riverside's great too, but Finkbine, and I probably only golf 10 times this year. I just don't golf as much as I used to. I used to golf 5 times a week.
Hey, that sounds like the life there. But that's a good list though, right there too. I like your list. You're no shortage of good courses too. So good for you, Coach. All right, two more, Coach. We'll get you out of here. But and know a little bit. I spent about nine or 10 months in Iowa City myself. So I'm a little familiar with what the eating trail looks like, but if Adam and I get a chance to come over and catch an Iowa City West game, where do we got to go and eat in Iowa City before we come check out your game?
Well, my buddy, Randy Larson, and who of course passed away this summer, he had a restaurant called Monica's. It's super good. I don't go out to eat much. If I go out to eat, we're at the lake. So There's lots of great restaurants. We go to Coach's Corner because it's on the way home between here and the gym. So after a game, we'll go to Coach's Corner. But it's just great food. You know, Polly Eyes Pizza, Wig and Pen. You know, you're not hearing much fine dining from me. You're not hearing about 800 steaks unless my brother's paying for them. So.
No, that's actually your music to our ears. That's what we want to know. I mean, I'm... Coach's Corner sounds like the perfect spot for Adam and I on the way. That's for sure. So.
Wings, the Vine, good wings. Yeah,
yep. Real good spot. Yeah, you can't go wrong. Like I said, there's plenty to choose from on your way before you head up the hill to Carver to catch a game. So, all right, Coach, we appreciate all the insight. But before we get you out of here, what's the best thing about having the opportunity to leave a legacy and be the head coach of the Iowa City West Trojans?
I mean, West High is such a unique school. I mean, you know, we're now 1,200, 1,300 students. We were 2,300 students 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and then Liberty opened. But it was so unique. We had these great teams, and I taught PE, and we were going to be really good one year. And the first try was ending. The second try, I got these new students. I said, anybody going to the basketball game tonight? First game of the year. And they're like, oh, I don't know. Are they any good? And I said, yeah, I think they'll be all right. And I said, maybe I'll give you extra credit if you go to the game. And the kid said, are you going? So then I realized, you know, like two-thirds of the kids in that school didn't know me as a basketball coach. They knew me as a PE teacher. And I remember when we first started having success, people asked me about it. And I said, man, we're state champs in debate. We're state champs in this and that. And, you know, athletics is just a very small part of what's really great about West High. You know, probably the best thing is, you know, I've been there a long time, and now I'm coaching kids I had. And so, you know, the story about me was that I would win and get out of there. And here I am, you know, 30 some years later. So, you know, I found a place I really liked. I found a place where they let me work you know, had a chance to succeed. And I had a couple of opportunities to kind of move, but they didn't really move me much. So, you know, I hung in there. I guess that can be my legacy.
There you go. Yeah. Well, that's it. And 600 and counting, we'll have to look it up. We know that it's more than that. And making your way up the list, that's for sure. And so best of luck here, Coach, as you continue to move through and continue to teach and shape and mold these young athletes as you move along. And we'll be following along and wishing you the best of luck. And we appreciate you taking some time with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. The football game tonight was no good, so this is a better way to spend an hour, right?
Yeah, that's right. Talking to you.
We're happy to have you here, Coach. It was great to talk to you. Great to learn a little bit more about you, and excited to watch the Trojans this year.
My pleasure.